Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Morning, Dan and Amy. You know, we started the show yesterday talking about what it would take to turn the city around, to begin that turnaround. What would it take to get people to stop saying, I'm leaving Chicago, I'm staying in the suburbs because I have a family and or a job, but I don't go downtown anymore.
That's for you crazy people who live there.
The thought of buying a condo downtown when the kids are gone, but my job is still here. That's by the boards. I'm not doing that. Well, here's the problem. If you can't create a reality that informs a perception that it is a safe place and people are safe from violence in Chicago, whether they're residents or visiting, then you have a problem. The flight will continue. So this story yesterday came to our attention. A bank robbery at Citibank at 222 West Adams in the heart of the Loop. This is how that went down with respect to police dispatch looking for an officer to respond to a suspect identified as standing in front of a nearby Walgreens, suspect in that bank robbery. Take a listen.
New on the board on one side. Got a wanted person, 222 West on Adams. Angela from Citibank states that a male black that robbed them is back on the block standing in front of Walgreens. He's a dark complexion, blue suit, black suitcase, white and blue Nike gym shoes. Does not have the RD at this time. Again, a male black that robbed the Citibank is standing at 222 West on Adams, dark complexion, blue suit, black suitcase, white and blue Nike. Doesn't have the RD. No further. 10-4, thank you very much. Anybody in there about to take a ride for Adams and Wills for the male that robbed Citibank standing in front of Walgreens?
Anybody?
1807, David.
Bueller.
Anybody?
Bueller.
It's not like he's hard to find. He's wearing a suit, carrying a black suitcase and white and blue gym shoes.
Bueller.
People don't wear suits in the city.
Bueller.
Do I have any available units in the area, Adams and Wales, for that wanted person? Male black, dark blue suit, black suitcase, blue and white Nikes. Standing in front of Walgreens. He's the same guy that robbed Citibank, according to Angela.
Couple more minutes go by.
Once again, we're still looking for a unit in the area of 222 West on Adams. Male black, dark complexion, blue suit, black suitcase, white and blue Nike gym shoes, robbed Citibank and is standing in front of Walgreens. Angela from Citibank does not have the RD. No further.
Couple more minutes go by, and then we learn something else about the suspect.
1-2-3.
There's a person wanted at 222 West Adams. The man that robbed them is back on the block in front of Walgreens. He's dark complected, blue suit, black suitcase, white and blue Nike gym shoes. He didn't have the RD number with him. It's somebody at Citibank calling.
10-4.
And it looks like they did have a robbery back on the 8th of June.
So they were robbed 8 days earlier, and they're robbed again, and police don't respond for more than an hour to the robbery, despite the fact that you have a suspect standing very near the site of the robbery, the Citibank, despite the fact that it wasn't long ago where you had a woman murdered, an employee of Chase Bank, murdered inside Chase Bank in the heart of the Loop as well. You see what I'm saying? I'm not even interested in the finger pointing here. Is that CPD? Is it this, the lack of resources and officers for CPD? It was that day. It's the context. You cannot have a city with stories like this and believe that Chicago will continue to be a going concern, will be a place that people want to locate and stay.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. My friend was carjacked. She had to wait more than an hour. But I've heard stories where people have had to wait 3 to 4 hours. At least now they're not making them pay the pound to get their car back when they get carjacked. Oh, thanks, Lightfoot. I mean, it's this city has gone to hell in a handbag. North Avenue Beach is gone. So if you're thinking about going to North Avenue Beach, you might want to try a different location, because you're not getting that back anytime soon.
I understand the FBI is on the case with respect to the June 8th robbery at Citibank. I don't believe they have any suspects in custody.
He might be a repeat offender.
Possibly.
If the description fits. I mean, he dresses up in a suit, guys. It's not like he's covering his face and wearing all black and saying, you know.
It doesn't matter.
He's easily to spot. And he's loitering around because he knows he can get away with it because he knows the cops aren't going to come. Criminals are not that stupid. Yes, some are. But most, you know, I mean, they know.
Yesterday, a missive from the Cook County office of President Toni Preckwinkle. Remember her?
Yeah, she's been.
To all the tenants and employees at 118 North Clark. Chicago Police Department has just informed us of a vehicle in the area of Madison and Dearborn shooting at pedestrians on the sidewalks. For your safety, please limit outdoor activities for the time being. Updates as we receive additional information. It's not funny, but we got a guy shooting pedestrians at Madison and Dearborn, so everybody stay inside.
Yeah.
Tough to enjoy the warm weather months downtown, isn't it?
Don't forget that Naperville aunt who was here with her newborn niece's baby walking up Halsted at 1:30 in the afternoon, got shot in the leg. 72 years old with the newborn baby. Broad daylight. That's what the city's turned into.
That's just what happens in the city. You're going to get winged by a bullet from time to time. That's just part of walking around downtown. You got to understand that, as one shooting victim actually said. I mean, that's the fatalistic mentality downtown. And again, it's not just Chicago, but it is Chicago. But in New York, you sort of have the same dynamic. You have, right, what seems to be, despite being law enforcement, a feckless mayor, Eric Adams, who's looking to be a celebrity, not looking to make his city safer. God. And you've got a Soros-funded non-prosecution prosecutor in Alvin Bragg. Well, even this guy was even too much for Alvin Bragg. But there again, you got your no cash bail laws in New York, just as we have in Illinois, thanks to your governor, our governor, and our mayor. Shoplifter who even DA Alvin Bragg wanted locked up is let go after 122nd arrest, thanks to bail laws, the New York Post reports. 122nd arrest. Do you think he'll do it again while he's out?
I think he will.
I mean,
while he's waiting for his trial.
Everybody deserves 123 chances.
Oh, did they even have time to cuff him with 123nd arrest?
Roger on the South Side.
It's funny you bring up Ms. Preckwinkle. Well, you know, I'll tell you what, she's about 50% of our problem right now. And the other 50% is that other hack that's over at the head of the judges over there.
Kim Fox? Tim Evans.
Is it Pimp Evans or Tim Evans?
Yeah, Tim. Right.
I thought it was. But
he thought his first name was Pimp.
No.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we used to call him 35 years ago, because he was a pimp then. He's got to be worse now. But anyway, listen, and he, you know who actually is worse, who makes me sicker? All the Cook County judges, you know, the ones who couldn't be lawyers because they couldn't support themselves. So they went in and got on their knees in front of Madigan. Okay? I know you're not.
And Burke. Don't leave out Ed Burke.
And Burke. Well, the worst part about it actually is I blame those two old fossils, okay, for handing this over to that federal informant who is the head of the Cook County Board right now. So could you imagine being a white Greek judge? Now you got to go down and kiss Tony Blue Suit. She wears a blue suit 7 days a week.
Very
Don't
smart.
Get too close.
Blue's her
Don't
color.
Yeah, it's her color. But with that said, so they go down there for a $200,000 a year job because they only want to work 3 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
But listen, you're going to go along with our woke ideologies, and you're going to go easy on our people. Okay, just like the Black General Assembly we have right now. Okay, these people are so, well, I'm not going to say it. But, you know, hey, their thinking, in case people who haven't, who just got to Chicago, is this. Well, you know, my block's all right. Well, you know, I know guys who live on the west side at 5500 West, you know, Madison. And well, my block's not bad.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we're leading the country in killings in our general population right here. But my block's not bad.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's the problem here. Mm-hmm. In between that and, okay, well, the cartels and the illegals and the sanctuary city people won't take your... No, if you're... not leaving Chicago now, there's something wrong with you. and you know what? Listen,
some of us have to stay, so we're going to make the best of it.
You're making a play for the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce top spot, aren't you, Roger?
Hey, Dan, they can build this. Like everybody's like, oh, there's a lot of work downtown. I go, listen, I don't care if they extend Randolph Street all the way to Harlem. Okay. Well, here, Amy, you live in Lakeview, right?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, good luck with that. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Well, you're still on the south side. Are you moving anytime, Roger?
I'm already gone. I in the last 6 months, I got rid of two rental properties, getting rid of two businesses. The last is a single-family home. And secondly, I'm a little different. I'll tell you why. Because I won't – listen, I'm always armed, and I know how these people think, okay, and I won't hesitate. There's a difference, but there's not many people like me – who are from this animal farm here. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm the guy that like they look at once and like, easier target.
Yeah, let's not bother Roger. Okay, Roger All Dodger, right. Thanks. That was a very entertaining and illuminating call, I must say.
I like how he's picked out Tony Preckwinkle's wardrobe.
I like O Fossils. I think I'm going to adopt O Fossils to refer to Madigan and Burke and the other longtime members of the Irish Mafia.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So, I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Now that the pandemic's over and the masks are off the kids, are you still paying attention to what's going on at your school? You know, now that they're back in class in person, oh boy. Well, the good news is a lot of people seem to be. There seems to be a growing attendance, at least at school board meetings in some places, including Barrington 220. This from a school board meeting on Tuesday night. And here, let us introduce you to another one of these luminaries who lords over a local school board. Gentlemen, you're going to have to get involved here. Sandra Fick Bradford, welcoming those in attendance.
Did just want to recognize that it is Pride Month, and I'd like to acknowledge all of our LGBTQ community here in 220 and express our pride in them, and just share a quick quote from the Dalai Lama. Love and compassion are necessities, not luxuries. Without them, humanity cannot survive.
Noted Eastern theologian Sandra Fick.
She's just trying to be hip, man.
We are proud of you, and let me recite something from the Lama. Yeah. So she's got that going for her, which is nice. That's, by the way, what you just heard, mm-hmm. when you hear it within your social circles, you see this. That is not compassion. It's sentimentality, which is barbarism. She is not a compassionate person. She's a barbarian. Then it was time for public comment. And to show you how barbaric these compassionate people are, one mom, her name is Nelda, addressed the board very pointedly and with graphics from a book you've heard about us talk about on this show, because it is in your kids' classrooms, your school libraries, starting in the primary grades, Genderqueer. And every time somebody cites Genderqueer, I got to say, I haven't gotten around to reading it cover to cover. I don't think it's required, because the excerpts that are read by parents at school board meetings,
cringy,
pretty much tell the story. Well, here's another one. Turn the floor over to Nelda.
June 3rd, my child's sixth grade English teacher sends out a summer reading material, including Genderqueer. Okay? Hopefully everybody can see this, yeah? 11, 12 years old.
Graphic pictures from Genderqueer.
Hopefully you like this.
Sexual in nature.
Yeah? You guys over there, because you guys make the decisions over there.
Hey, pay attention.
Okay, 11-year-old.
Disgusting.
All right.
Oh, which is just
now, from this book, Brother Talking to Sister, So You Never Tasted Yourself?
Ah, gross.
Sister shows brother vagina slime. Then there's words blowjob, gay shit. This is exactly what I would expect a pedophile to behave when approaching a child, to normalize sexual behavior, to abuse them. And this is how I see you. Stop sexualizing our kids. Stop abusing them.
Thank you, Nelda. Margot Zada. After Margot Zada is Sylvia Coleman.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you for accusing us of being pedophiles. Next, who else would like to accuse us of crimes against humanity? Is there anybody else who has any other Geneva Convention violations they would like to allege against the school board?
They're so dismissive and rude. The parents! I mean, they're parents. Oh my God.
They're not human. You just accused me of being a pedophile. You just raised the issue of essentially behaving like a pedophile. Okay. All right. Next, we have Sylvia Nunez.
Nunez, Sylvia, please come to the lectern.
These people are farcical. They are not adults.
Well, do they? They have to approve their summer reading list. The Board of Ed does, don't they? I mean, why would they allow that to happen? It's disgusting. They probably didn't even know they were doing it.
Right. They're all innocent bystanders. I'm sorry. The teacher puts out a summer reading list. That's not an accident. She wasn't a passive observer.
No, I know, but I'm saying.
And the school board the number of people in attendance at the meeting and other comments of this sort, if they hadn't been apprised previously, I think they've been apprised recently. So let's default to the position that as a school board member, you're supposed to be in touch with what's happening. I don't know what's going on. I'm just as upset as you are. That's the routine of the political hack when things go bad, when situations are discovered that they don't want discovered, when things are going poorly within systems under their control. Oh, God, you know, I hear what you're saying. I'm outraged. I'm more outraged than you. Somebody should do something about this, but not me. Not the person in charge. Please. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Hey, if the honkies in Barrington can stand up to their school board, how about the rest of you around Chicagoland? And I mean in really specifically in these wealthy enclaves, because that's where this stuff is the most pernicious, and then it, you know, sort of radiates out from there. Oh, well, look, oh, the North Shore is doing it. Oh, Barrington's doing it. Oh, Naperville is doing it. Everybody should be doing it. No, everybody should be doing what Nelda just did at minimum.
And it's, I mean, it's packed. These are not, I mean, this is a packed school board meeting in June.
That was Tuesday night.
Right. I'm just saying, it, I mean, people are still, they're not taking the summer off, parents, and yeah. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah. This is
because they were there for the fight when we were trying to get school in-person learning back, when we were trying to get sports back, and Barrington was great. So was Naperville. There's certain districts that really, you know, they came together.
People have been asleep at the switch for a while, but at least we're seeing some people try to make up for lost time. Updating Oak Park River Forest.
Oh, yeah.
OPRF, they've got a school board member named Gina Harris. Here's another aspect of being a school board member and holding your school board to account, particularly when your school board member also is a public school administrator. Oak Park River Forest District 200 school board member Gina Harris. You know, OPRF, they've got that racial grading system that has nothing to do with race.
Right.
Yeah, Oak Park River Forest. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oak Park River Forest District 200 school board member Gina Harris. She makes $82,000 a year as an administrator at Julian Middle School in Oak Park. She's taken 71 days off over the last two school years.
What? 71 days? It's almost half the year.
She's got, pretty good vacation sick leave policy.
She must have a very strong teaching assistant who could take over for her.
She's not a teacher.
Oh, she's in.
She's a culture and climate coach for middle school students.
I'm sorry, a culture and climate change coach?
Yeah. They got a culture and climate problem out there in Oak Park, so they hired a coach.
Teach them how to recycle and how to be better citizens to Mother Earth.
She teaches them how to be a Marxist.
Okay.
Because that's what OPRF does.
But District 200, really
as well as the grade school.
Yeah, you take 71 days off, though, you're really not doing your job.
No, I know. You could be moving the flag for Marxism much more effectively if you were there more often. But
right.
She missed 56 full days and 15 half days in total, 21 absences in the 2021 school year, her first year working at this middle school. But your first year on the job and you miss 21 days. Does that work for you and your job?
I'd be fired.
Then 2021, 2022, she missed 50 days. That's a third of the state's mandated 176 days of school attendance. A third. Apparently, we need a truant officer for some of these administrators. Uh-huh. 14 times she missed school for union work. Well, obviously, that takes precedence. So, yeah, we'll have to give her a pass there.
Fortin, please. You're not. That's illegal. You're not supposed to. Well, at CPS, you can't do that.
She's
can't take days off or use your school time to promote union work.
She serves on the National Education Association Board of Directors and as treasurer of its Black Caucus. She's currently running for secretary treasurer of the NEA, the Big Teachers Union. So I mean, she doesn't have time. You know, she's got a lot of balls in the air when it comes to advancing Marxism. as an officer at the NEA, as well as a culture and climate coach in Oak Park at Julian School in Oak Park. So
sounds like a ghost job.
So I bring this up not just because of you know, people being upset about the decisions that are being made, but also do you care at all about people whose salary you're paying
that aren't showing up for work?
Showing up for work, and maybe if the position doesn't require you to be there for a third of the year, maybe you don't need a culture and climate coach at Julian School in Oak Park.
You can just have a speaker come in if you really need one. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
John, Naperville.
Yeah, let's play with the shoe on the other foot. What would these liberal Biden-voting mothers say if your girl's softball coach asked your girl if she tasted herself? What would happen? What would happen?
Mm-hmm.
You know, these teachers need to be held accountable by the law. This pornographic is child abuse. They need to be going to jail.
Thanks, John. Chris and Carrie.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. Obviously, Carrie is right next to Barrington, and I'm fully expecting that book to be part of our curriculum probably next school year. And, you know, Dan, you hit it right on the head. You made the comment about neighborhoods or different towns following the wealthy ones. I mean, it's totally like, it's almost like we have a complex here in Cary. It's like we're always worried about what's Barrington doing? What's Barrington doing? They must know how to do it because look how wealthy they are.
Mm-hmm.
They must know what they're doing.
So smart
people know
money.
What they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's so insane, Dan. I can't tell you, Amy, I know you're from Palatine. Thank God you didn't grow up in like Barrington. It's so screwed up there. I mean, it's a joke.
We played them. No, I went to, I'm from Mount Prospect, but I went to Hersey High School in Arlington. And yes, I saw things in the girls' bathroom when we played Barrington back in the day. But I think they've cleaned up a lot. It's a good school. I mean, it is.
It is.
Well, I've got a lot of
says who?
I have friends, children that go to school there, and they love it there, and they're thriving. They're doing very well.
Based on what?
Their grades are academic, and they're getting scholarships in sports, and they're good kids.
Yeah, right. Thanks for the call, Chris. You know what these places are? Yeah.
They're all it's the same conference.
The school, these schools, you have that. You have a teacher that is suggesting or assigning that for summer reading.
In sixth grade.
Then you do not have a good school. It is not possible, actually, to have a good school. Because you've clearly lost control of staff. And if you lose control of staff, you can't have a good organization. So I don't want to hear nonsense about schools that were once upon a time good that are still in wealthy areas that are good schools. They're not good schools. There's some students come out and they're educated and talented and because of mom and dad and because of their work ethic and because of their exposure to other things outside. Sure. Yeah, I get it. But as I often reference about the North Shore, my crash course on the North Shore when I was an undergrad at Northwestern and then when I was running campaigns up there and didn't have any exposure prior to then, see all these places on the lakefront and Wilmette and Winnetka all the way up through Glencoe and to, through Kenilworth into Glencoe and Highland Park, like four. A lot of nice houses, not a lot of nice homes. And you know where you see that reflected? In the schools and what has been allowed to happen in those schools. What has been advocated for with nary much opposition for the longest time. That's how you know. You know what? Be real honest. You want a gut check? They're garbage communities with garbage schools. And I don't care how much money you have. I'm not impressed. Mark in Mundelein.
Hey, morning. Yeah, you guys, my wife and I have shared this story. Now, there's numerous stories, but I think the most glaring is this one where our girls, Neil McCarthy, who was so worldly and so sophisticated, when he would talk about Republicans, he would go into his animated redneck dance that, of course, elicited a lot of laughs from the kids. So he referred to Republicans either, you know, rednecks or Neanderthals. And, you know, you're teaching 17-year-old kids that, of course, thought it was funny. But so you guys, that's just a small glimpse of what we experience. And what you guys are sharing it is, it's nauseating.
That was your daughter's poli sci teacher?
Correct, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the, what high school was that?
Mundelein High School.
Lewis B. Mundelein, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. It's just, you know, and to think that this, and I've seen him interviewed, and of course he's talking to the interviewer, and he's, you know, he's kind of rubbing his goatee as, you know, all of his worldly experiences, but yet this is what he does when he's in front of our kids.
Right. Thanks for the call, Mark. Yeah, when they have the run of the place and nobody's watching and nobody's challenging. And that's changing some places. Not enough places.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission: to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Got a big debate, important debate going on in Chicago. It's a debate between democracy and protecting our children. Wow, this sounds very important.
Sounds epic.
That's what I understand from Mayor Triple Threat and Alderman Tony Beal, that they are finally having the debate about first principles, fundamental truths about how we're going to organize the city of Chicago, these deep thinkers. These considered policymakers. The debate takes the unusual form, given the preface I just provided, the unusual form of whether or not red light cameras will be calibrated to issue tickets at 6 miles over the speed limit or 10 miles over the speed limit.
Well, and Alderman Beal says it, you know, discriminates against his constituents, that it's a money grab that unfairly targets his people in his community. And it's not stopping people from speeding. It's not doing any of that. Here's Alderman Beal.
This item has already been deferred and published once, and you cannot defer and publish an item twice.
Because they, you know, they tabled it again, and you can't do that. But, of course, Mayor Lightfoot can do whatever she wants.
Fascinating.
When the administration doesn't want something to come for a vote and they don't want to see democracy in action, you become a dictator and you allow things to get squashed.
Will you help Anthony Beal save our democracy in Chicago? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. No, go ahead, Amy. Give us the Tony Beal defense.
No. Let's hear from Mayor Lightfoot first, because she says Alderman Beal and other aldermen, because it was voted out of committee 16 to 15, that they're putting children's lives, they're killing children.
It's truly unconscionable that any city council member would even consider voting to allow increased speeds, let alone their spaces utilized by our children.
Because what, you want them eliminated altogether? It's a money grab, Dan. Since they lowered it from 10 miles per hour to 6 miles per hour, $59 million more dollars for the city to spend on what we don't know. And it's not stopping people from driving fast. Speed light cameras. It was a money grab. They were trying to get as much as they could get, so that's why they lowered it. It has nothing to do with safety. None of these red light cameras have anything to do with safety. Unless I'm wrong. But Well, what do you want them eliminated altogether, right?
Don't worry about my position. You want to defend Tony Beal's position. Well, give it to me. What's the defense? Oh, it's a money grab? Yeah, I know it's a money grab. So what?
Yeah, and money that his constituents and people that live in Pullman don't have to spend.
Tony Beal's the hero in this story?
At least he's doing something.
Well, he's doing
been
something.
Fighting this. He's been trying to lower this.
Oh, he's doing something.
He's been
something.
Trying to raise this to 10 miles per hour, which it used to be at. He's been trying to do it for more than a year. And he finally has some people.
I'm sorry.
Aldermen who.
Slow. I want to start slow.
Support
and
him.
Then build. Mm-hmm.
And that's why he's doing it.
Hero, Tony Beal. Arguing about how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. 10 miles an hour over the speed limit or 6 miles an hour over the speed limit. The great debate in Chicago. I mean, are you serious?
We get pinched all the time by these speed cameras. And when they lowered it from 10 to 6, you know it was bull jive and it was about more revenue for the city because we're broke than about safety. So, yes, Alderman Beal, as you said, should be fighting to have all the red light cameras eliminated.
What Alderman Beal is doing is fighting to keep red light cameras. My constituents are being discriminated against. This is outrageous. Let me give you some esoteric process argument about my measure before the body of 50 trained SEALs. Wow. Wow. I'm dizzy. He's fighting to keep red light cameras. And he's the hero in the story. Because if we get to, what, calibration at 10 miles over the speed limit? Everything's right with the world again? It's no longer a money grab? His constituents are no longer being discriminated against? Unfairly targeted for money they don't have? All those arguments go away if you just increase it 4 miles an hour? You think that's compelling? Tony Beal's been there for, what, 20 years? And all of a sudden he doesn't like the compliant city council and the strong mayor form of government, de facto strong mayor form of government. How is what Triple Threat has done on this issue any different than everything else that's been tolerated over the last 50 years from all the previous miniature mayors? I mean, democracy. Oh, the children. You people buy this? And then you wonder why the city is a raging catastrophe.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. You can also text us at 646-366, type in DA, then a quick comment.
You can't get police to respond to a bank robbery in the Loop. I mean, can you just let this wash over you for a second so that maybe some people can have some perspective return to them? I mean, I don't know. I guess it's me. I'm just at a loss. I'm at a loss, not just on the decisions that are made, but on the discussions that predicate these decisions. On the prioritization, on the attention that is paid. I'm paying attention to this just for illustrative purposes. How many times do you have to watch this play out before you recognize there are not two sides and there's nobody wearing a white hat and a black hat. They're all, it's just grifters. It's just grifters grifting. Wanting to be king of the hill of the grifters. Whether it's the teachers union president du jour and the mayor du jour, or it's some alderman and the mayor over some, you know, political issue. Tony Beal wants to protect, you know, support from the red light camera community while also pretending to do something for his constituents, his long suffering Southside constituents, I might add.
And Alderman Michelle Smith now wants to put metal detectors at North Avenue Beach and hire private security after, what, the fourth shooting there?
Pete in Montgomery.
Morning, Dan. Morning, Amy. So it's not lost on me that the mayor and the aldermen are arguing over the level of criminality. If this were about safety and following the law, there would be zero tolerance over the speed limit. But there isn't. So it's a specious argument from both of them.
Yeah.
To your point, Dan.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, thanks for the call, Pete. Although, I mean, the whole red light camera thing, it doesn't improve safety. And by the way, removing the red light cameras, that doesn't mean I want Chicago police to be turned into meter maids either. Or, you know, sitting at corners trying to get people for 5 miles over the speed limit. You think that's the endemic problem in Chicago? You have limited resources. Where do you want to prioritize them? Traffic tickets? No.
Let speed cameras do it for you. A stack of them.
Hey, Tom in Oswego.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. All I hear is these politicians and bureaucrats nibbling around the corners, trying to make themselves look good for the next election cycle. No one is solving problems.
What are you talking about? Haven't you heard the news? We renamed Asian Carp.
Dan, the problem is I am listening to the news, and every morning I hate getting up and going to work. And you know what? It's starting to affect my kids. These are smart kids. They're out in the business world, and now I can see it starting to affect them.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I've got a licensing problem with the state of Illinois right now. We called the state. Guess what? They can't even give us an answer as to what the problem is. They just put a ticket in and say they'll call you in 14 business days. I'm thinking, what are you talking about, 14 business? I tell you what, Dan, honestly, the systems are broke. And I,
What a surprise. The systems are broke. But we got that Asian carp name figured out.
Well, yeah. U.S. Fish and Wildlife said they wanted to move away from terms that cast Asian culture and people in a negative light. We spent $600,000 on rebranding it. More than $500,000. And then the Chicago media says, oh, no, it's because we want people to renamed it so that people have it for dinner in a tilapia, in a taco, or in a... an Asian carp burger. It's so ridiculous. I don't even know. They can't even keep their story straight on that one either, on the renaming of a fish.
Kopi.
You know why they're calling it Kopi?
Copious.
Yes, because there's a copious amount of them in the Illinois River.
And who had to look up copious to know what it meant?
I don't know.
Drum roll, please.
And how much do they get paid?
The new name for Asian carp is Kopi. That's C-O-P-I.
How many CPS students can spell copy or can define copious? What percentage do you think?
I'm not playing those reindeer games.
Asian carp name problem solved.
Yeah, but was it about the Asian culture and the negative light, or was it about putting the carp on the table so people eat it? Because it's still always going to be Asian carp.
Suffering enough intellectual damage having to distill the Tony Bia, Lori Lightfoot argument. I'm not going down to discussing in any seriousness the name change. George in Montgomery.
$600,000.
Yeah, I don't know why Anthony Beal don't concentrate on telling his constituents to obey the law.
You think the law is a sensible law? Do you, George?
It's a money grab, but right. Everything from the left, it's always about changing the law instead of following the law.
Well, I hear what you're saying, George. But you right. If you want to be a leader and a policymaker, then you should say, maybe you should say this. Does it make sense to align government against its constituents? Isn't that what we're doing with so many of the policies that we pursue? By the way, including the casino. We tell people to save their money and we sanction lotteries and gambling and market to them to play the lottery and to go to a gambling house.
Right.
Don't smoke, but we budget for cigarette taxes we expect to collect. Mm-hmm. Don't speed, but we budget for red light camera tickets we expect. Does it make sense to prey on people to create perverse incentives so that you can get from their back pocket, which you're not courageous enough to take from their front pocket? If Anthony Beale had said something like that, maybe I'd be mildly impressed. But that's not how he thinks, because he's another tax eater. This is just a debate. Well, this is, to borrow from the libertarians, this is three wolves and a sheep deciding what to have for lunch. And I'll let you in Chicago figure out who the sheep is in the story.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. We've got the final Republican gubernatorial debate tonight at the MAC at College of DuPage. 7 o'clock, and it's going to be broadcast on our airwaves live. 7 o'clock.
Yes. Doors open, by the way, at the MAC at 6:30. Each candidate got 200 tickets to hand out. We handed out here at AM 560, 250 tickets, and there's still some space available. So come on down. Again, the doors open at 6:30 this evening. The debate begins at 7 o'clock.
Have you made your decisions yet? Or are you waiting for the big AM 560 debate?
Oh,
you make your decision. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-363-6DA, turnkey.pro text line.
I talked to a number of suburban women and women in Chicago yesterday, and a lot are undecided. And some have flipped. Some have flipped from Sullivan to Bailey. Some have flipped from Bailey to Sullivan. Mm-hmm. And a lot, I mean, I talked to 13 people, which is a lot for me because I had to dig deep. But they're all watching this debate tonight to see.
Or listening.
Or listening. Yeah, well, some are coming down to the event, too, to make sure, you know, this is it. This is the final stretch. Election is Tuesday.
I want to do some advertising for Richard Irvin, because I want to.
He's not showing up, by the way, tonight.
Right. I want people to remember who was where. It's always good to have some institutional memory. Remember the choices that people made. We talked about one earlier this week, Ryan Spain, this rep from Peoria, who April made, you know, Irvin and Bourne are, you know, the future of Illinois. And then this week, please join me at a rally for Jesse Sullivan.
What was that lawmaker's name again?
Ryan Spain.
Oh, that's right.
State rep from Peoria. He's in leadership, too. I mean, you know, what constitutes leadership for the super minority 30 pieces of silver caucus headed up by the doofus Jim Durkin.
Jim Durkin. Is he jump ship yet? Durkin?
Hey, listen up.
Is he sinking with the ship?
Listen up, all you suburbanites. Listen to Don DeWitt. Don DeWitt.
I know Don DeWitt. Oh, no. What did he do?
You know him.
I just met him. I'm just.
Oh, you well, boy,
was not
that. What a brush it's with greatness.
Well, it's more important to be with you every morning than Don DeWitt. Don't tell Tom.
I was never the mayor of St. Charles. I was never a state legislator. Don DeWitt.
But you know some.
Here's a closing argument for Irvin from Don DeWitt.
Well, I'm supporting my friend Richard Irvin for the governor of the state of Illinois for a number of reasons. Number one, I believe as a former mayor, like Mayor Irvin, I have an appreciation for the skill set that is required to any municipality. I don't pretend to understand what running the second largest state in the second largest city in the state of Illinois would be like, but I am fairly confident that the skill set required to run a city of St. Charles like ours of 34,000 people, the skill set is very similar to the skill set required to run a community of 200,000 people.
So then you do pretend to know.
I know Richard has dealt with all of the issues that the state of Illinois is currently facing.
Mm-hmm.
I know he's dealt with significant crime issues in the city of Aurora, which he has dealt with.
Stand down orders.
Significantly improving the crime statistics in the city of Aurora.
Violent crime up.
I know he has been involved in economic development in the city of Aurora. Aurora's been my neighbor down the years for a number of years. Aurora shines in 2022 compared to years past. And thirdly, I know Mayor Irvin has the financial capability to deal with all of the financial issues that the state of Illinois is currently dealing with. If there's anything I've learned about being in Springfield and having served in local government, it's that every single week in municipal government, you sit in front of your constituency, whether it's a council meeting, whether it's a committee meeting, you are there week in and week out to address your constituency, and they get to address you. I can assure you that Mayor Richard Irvin has all of the right tools in his toolkit to run the state of Illinois as its next governor.
Wait, is he done yet?
There you go.
All I heard was one, and then I never heard two, three, four.
Don DeWitt doing what the refrigerator magnet Republicans do, which is making claims, not arguments. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. Good old Don DeWitt in St. Charles. Oh, yeah. Former Congressman John Shimkus from downstate.
Richard Irvin has a heart for public service, and that he's willing to sacrifice a lot to improve the lives of the people in the state of Illinois. I'm former Representative John Shimkus, and I'm with Richard Irvin.
Yeah.
And I have a gun to my head.
Good.
I mean, doesn't it sound like it?
I want.
Oh, that was really genuine. I'm really feeling the love for Richard Irvin with that, aren't you, Dan? Whew. Do you have any more? This is fun.
I want people.
Is this like their last push?
People to take stock, particularly in the suburbs up here, mm-hmm. but also downstate. I mean, I know Trump is coming in for Mary Miller this weekend in Quincy.
And who's he going to support? Is he going to back any candidate?
We'll see. He's backing Mary Miller and Rodney Davis, which is why I'm mentioning it. And that's another race. I hope Mary Miller wipes the floor with Rodney Davis, another refrigerator magnet Republican who started out as a conservative back 25 years ago now when I first met him, and now has just become just another guy like Don DeWitt.
A soft Republican, moderate Republican, or even worse?
It's not even moderate versus conservative. They are one-dimensional cardboard cutout people. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to listen to them just prattle on, stringing words together, almost like Kamala Harris, where it doesn't really matter which order in which the words are presented. Because they're not saying anything. They just want to be considered some sort of village elder. Walk around in your suit and pretend that you're somebody important. That you're doing something important. Rather than presiding over the destruction of a great state. Which is what they've mainly been doing. Dr. Yerkes in Oak Lawn, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, I'm Dr. Yerkes. Thanks, Dan and Amy. I'm Dr. Yerkes. I'm running for Illinois 31. I'm running against Mary Flowers, who's been on Springfield for 38 years, a Madigan ally. And what are we talking about? Inflation, crime, corruption, taxes, school, you know, school choice. I'm endorsing the next governor of Illinois, Darren Bailey.
Thanks for the call, Doc. Clay and Wheeling, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning, Dan and Amy. Seems like Don Dimwit can read a script just slightly better than Joe Biden. Amazing. Anyway, I could care less about an Illinois governor race. I know how things are done in the state of Illinois. Two cigars wrapped with a $100 bill. My money's going elsewhere this year. I'm going to Arizona, all these swing states. I like Kerry Lake out of Arizona. Honestly, I could care less about Illinois politics anymore. State's already done for. Thanks,
so
guys.
So you're not going to vote? Thanks. Are you registered?
Oh, I'm still going to vote. Still going to vote.
Well,
yeah.
Who are you going to vote for?
But probably Bailey. But, okay. You know, the lesser of evils.
Well, listen to the debate tonight and see if any of them, you know, see if you'll solidify your vote for Bailey after the debate.
Irvine is full of crap. Yeah. That city has gone to H-E double hockey stick. One of my favorite butcher shops was broken into 3 times until the guy finally was like, I'm done. And he retired and moved to Florida. So,
But the numbers are coming out from the Aurora. 40% increase in violent crime in Aurora. And those numbers are coming from the Aurora Police Department. So they're not made up numbers. 18% increase in sexual assault. I mean, it goes on and on.
Irvin is tackling the controversial issues, though. Tweeting out, Richard Irvin, Republican candidate for Illinois governor, lifelong White Sox fan, tells me it's time for the White Sox to fire manager Tony La Russa. He needs to go, Irvin said at a campaign stop in Wakanda. He should have been gone a long time ago.
Should I ask that question tonight to Gary Rabine and the poll group?
Tony La Russa,
should Tony La Russa go, stay or go? That's provocative. That's entertaining. Unbelievable. Sit down. Not your business.
By the way, something Richard Irvin is going to do.
What?
He is going to destroy the record set by Ron Gidwitz for highest cost per vote in a Republican primary. Mark my words. Something else, and I'll probably present the data tomorrow. Or maybe a little bit later today before the debate. Maybe that can inform the debate.
Why don't you help the sister out?
Well, before the debate.
Okay.
Reputed Sullivan surge, that Sullivan's and the phony poll I told you about on Monday explained to you why it was not accurate. Yeah, that Sullivan surge is not real. Now, it's very possible that Richard Irvin could finish third. It's possible he could finish a distant second, too. It's possible that Jesse Sullivan could finish a distant second. But where the race stands right now, there is no surge from either one.
Oh,
sorry.
Please provide the data before tonight.
Frank in Arlington Heights.
Yeah, I'm all for Darren Bailey. And I'm saying that, too, because I think that out of all the candidates that the Republicans are putting up, he is the only one who has a chance against J.B. Pritzker. I don't think Sullivan really could. I just don't see it. He's spent too much time in California. You know, Bailey presents a contrast, the downstate farmer. He is a man with a completely different set of values than J.B. Pritzker. And he can give the government of Illinois back to its people, much like Ronald Reagan gave the government back to the people of the United States for a while. He could do that here in Illinois. He could present that contrast. His 102-county tour that he's doing shows that he's trying to reach the entire state. He is the candidate who can beat J.B. Pritzker, and he is the candidate who J.B. Pritzker is most afraid of, because that would be a big embarrassment for our governor to lose.
Well,
Darren Bailey.
Thanks for the call, Frank. It's interesting you say that because, of course, the perception because of the money spent by the DGA, Democrat Governor Association, is
in the millions, right?
You know, is touting Bailey as a conservative essentially and attacking Irvin. So the argument goes that clearly Spalding is most afraid of Richard Irvin, doesn't want to face Richard Irvin. That's probably true. It's probably true that he doesn't want to face Richard Irvin. And it's probably true that he'd love to face Bailey, not just because he's, you know, he thinks he's too conservative for the state of Illinois, like Jim Edgar thinks, is what I'm saying. But also, you know, I'll teach Darren Bailey a lesson. Teach him a lesson for standing up to me during the pandemic. I'm gonna squash the one voice of dissent from the Illinois General Assembly during the lockdowns and the shutdowns and the mask mandates. I'll teach him. I'll show him.
Remember when he walked in too, and he was the only one unmasked, and people were fainting, like, "Oh my God, yeah. He doesn't have a mask on. We're all gonna die." And nobody died. Freaks.
So it wouldn't surprise me that Jelly Belly, being a small man in character, would want to deliver a real resounding victory against Darren Bailey, in particular because of his obstreperousness during COVID. But it may turn out that Darren Bailey could teach Governor Pritzker a thing or two. And because the left doesn't want our identitarians, and they don't want to face, or they're less inclined to face, some a minority, it doesn't mean that they've got the race sussed out. So we'll see. Yeah, maybe Jelly Belly will be able to teach Darren Bailey a lesson. You know, it's a state that leans pretty solidly left. So there's a lot of institutional advantages that Jelly Belly has even in this year, but we'll see. The point that Frank from Arlington Heights made about contrast is the key one. It's also the thing that the institutional Republicans, the refrigerator magnet Republicans like Don DeWitt, haven't understood for a long time, as we have seen the Republican Party descend towards oblivion. Which is that our election's about choices, about matchups, about contrasts, competing visions. And when you're just going to mimic the other side, you're going to diminish your standing, and that's exactly what's happened. So the only way that you reshuffle the deck is to challenge people to consider something they haven't even been asked to consider in 30 years, at least. Probably more like 50. So it's a flyer, as it would be with any of these candidates. But we'll see how these 30 pieces of silver Republicans who've all rolled in for Bailey. All rolled in for Irvin because of Ken Griffin's money. We'll see how they react to Bailey. I mean, if they show themselves to be the rats they've shown themselves to be to this point, okay, it's fine. You don't need enemies inside your perimeter.
But would Ken Griffin throw money at, money to Bailey if he wins?
You don't need enemies inside your perimeter. You unify with those who are up for the battle. And those who aren't, okay. Well, we'll just have to fight without you. That's how it is.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, in our effort to continue to bring you candidates for Republican candidates for offices that are on the ballot on Tuesday. Today we're doing Illinois 14. This is one of three congressional seats that are potentially pick-upable, if you will, for Republicans this year because of how the year is shaping up, I would argue. 14 is currently held by Lauren Underwood. We talked yesterday to the Republican candidates for 11 that's held by Bill Foster. And, of course, the race in 6, we talked to those candidates as well. That's to take out either Sean Casten or Marie Newman, whichever socialist wins the Dem primary, but both are incumbents drawn together. All three of those districts are winnable for Republicans this year, it would seem to me.
And Lauren Underwood's been very quiet. I haven't seen her or heard from her or anything. She hasn't made any news lately.
No, not lately. But there are some things she said over her first term that I think she'll find challenging to explain in a general election if it's done right. Candidates we're talking to today, Scott Greider, Mike Coolidge, James Martyr, Jack Lombardi, and Jamie Milton. And we start with Scott Greider, who's a Kendall County board member and an attorney. Scott, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So we go back, Scott and I, to his days, Kendall County Young Republicans, when I was back on the trail in my misspent youth. Scott, you've been on the county board for a few terms now. Why leveling up for Congress this go around?
Well, I appreciate that. And you're right. We do go back a ways. And just imagine how different things would be if you had been governor back in, was it 10 or 12?
10, yeah. Imagine. Boy. Yeah. It's like a John Lennon song. Yeah,
there you go. I won't sing for you this morning, but
please.
I was elected to the county board it's been almost 10 years now, and I've been the chairman since 2016. And what kind of spurred me on this time around were a couple of things to run for Congress. One is that, since 2018, Lauren Underwood has been our congresswoman, and I've met with her, I think, exactly one time. I've seen her now three or four times in the county, actually, in the last couple of last month or so. So all of a sudden now she's coming around.
She's in her second term. I keep thinking of her as a freshman because she's been such a non-entity. I apologize.
Right.
Go ahead.
Right. And she actually is bringing the vice president to Plainfield, which is the population center of our district today. And I hope she'll ask her the tough questions because, what I'm getting all over the place is why, what are we going to do about the cost of rising, of living that keeps rising, $6 gas, butter, milk, eggs, just the basics going through the roof. And, initially we saw things go in the wrong direction, which is kind of why I wanted to jump in here. But, before that even, it was just government overreach generally. As the county board chair, part of the state government. So, we had to listen to a lot of this executive orders and things like that that hurt our small business. And we did our best to keep everybody open in Kendall County. And, I just felt like that we weren't being represented either statewide or nationally, and thought this was a good opportunity with a new district, very blue collar, kind of an east to west district now instead of the north to south. And looked around, and I just felt like this is the time to give it a shot.
I think actually Lauren Underwood is being very generous, bringing Kamala Harris in to help the Republican candidates.
To Plainfield on Friday? I mean, is anybody going to show up? That's a big ask.
I'd show up. I'd show up with my spotters to make sure you snap a lot of pictures. But anyway, go ahead.
So what sets you apart, though? Well, what sets you apart, Scott, from the other candidates, the other four?
Yeah, I'm the only one that has, run in and won in a Republican primary and general election against Democrats. And, I think that's going to make a difference. And in this election itself, once you get through the primary, I was unanimously elected three different times as the chairman of the board. So I can work across, party lines as well. But saying that, we're not going to give up on our core principles either. I'm a constitutionalist. I'm a member of the Federalist Society. Since 2016, when I became chair, we have not raised the tax levy, on property taxes here in Kendall County. So I'm looking to be a fiscal steward out in D.C. as well. And once again, just flooding the market with all this quote unquote free money. You're seeing that what's happening with when we flood the market with free money right now, everything else goes up. And the answer, no pun intended, that that Lauren Underwood has provided, gift cards for gas to residents is just a non-starter, and that doesn't work, and that ignores the problem completely.
And provide a little bit more detail during COVID, as a Kane County board member along with your colleagues. What was your approach to the mandates that were being imposed by the governor?
We kind of took the approach that businesses should still be able to operate regardless of they need to make a living. And so along with our sheriff and our state's attorney, we kind of came to the conclusion early on that in Kendall County, you could operate as you saw fit. Now, what that meant was that most of them had state licensing that they had to worry about.
Right.
So there were still going to be potential issues that they had there if they kind of thumbed their nose at the governor. But in Kendall County, we were not going to enforce that. As I'm the liquor commissioner by virtue of being the chairman of the board. We allowed for, packaged liquors. We didn't have anybody operating outside of, their purview. What the state of Illinois did, we can't control that. But in Kendall County, we were able to encourage them. And what I found out since I've been running for this seat is that it empowered a lot of our businesses to continue to try to stay open. And picking the winners and losers between whether it was a big box store that could sell shoes or a mom and pop that could sell shoes, why couldn't they sell those shoes or furniture store? The list goes on. There was no difference. It was completely arbitrary.
We were talking a little bit before you came on about the governor's race. And so, knowing where everybody was and the decisions that were made and the basis of some of those decisions. So you're on the list of campaign co-chairs for Irvin and Bourne, for Richard Irvin. Why Richard Irvin for governor?
I've known Richard for almost 20 years, and I've had the opportunity to work with him as mayor, and I knew him before he became the mayor, and I felt that when he decided to get into the race, that it was a great opportunity to represent us both locally and somebody that understood the county and local government very well. One of the items that we worked together on was small cell wireless, where they wanted to come through and the state of Illinois was giving these companies the right to come in and put the new 5G on any of, kind of put them up in any of our right of ways. It took away the local control aspect of it. They could come through and do it without having to run through our local zoning processes. I'm very much a local control person. So with his help, we were able to get, shine some light on that and get some more media coverage. And it helped slow down the process and get a little bit more for the local control. Unfortunately, it still ended up going through, but it was different things like that where I felt like, if you were able to take that to a greater level and to actually, knock out a, J.B. Prisker, that would help us.
Do you think that he's a Republican? Knowing what you know about how he supported BLM, how he voted in the Democratic primary, 7 out of the last 8 primaries, you still think he's a Republican?
Well, the first time I met him, my recollection is that it was at a Joe Burkett event when he was running for Republican nomination for Attorney General years ago, and I've always felt that he was a Republican, and whether he pulls the ballot, I'm a former party chair here in Kendall County, and I can tell you that there are a lot of people that pull Republican ballots in this county that are not because they want their vote to matter, and so that's the way I looked at it with him, as well up in Aurora,
mm-hmm.
Except in reverse.
If he's not the nominee, are you going to have any issues supporting whoever is for governor?
We have to be J.B. Pritzker. That's the bottom line. So whoever our nominee is, I'm behind, 100%.
All right, Scott. And if you are the nominee, how do you frame the race against Lauren Underwood? What gives you, do you think, the best chance to win a general?
I think that just some of the victories that we've had at the local level where we've been able to keep things in check as far as, as best we can with property taxes. I think that we've got a good base here in Kendall County, which is right in the middle of this district. Goes from Lockport to Mendota, and the district is kind of a microcosm of Kendall County, where you've got the suburban part of it and a very, very agricultural and manufacturing part of it. And I think that just with my experience and having worked in those in that kind of environment, that'll make me best suited to, take on Lauren Underwood and really represent this district. I look forward to it. I've been excited about it. It's been fun traveling all over the place and meeting new people and talking to business owners and talking to farmers and you know, just everyday people at the grocery store about, you know, what's on their mind. And you know, Lauren Underwood hasn't done anything to help them. And, you know, we talked a little bit at the beginning of this. It's curious that she's bringing the vice president in to kind of the heart of the population center of this district. I think it's she's really tone deaf by doing that. And I hope that the question is asked what they're going to do and how they're going to fix this economy, because they're not answering it now. Well, they are answering it, and it continues to get worse with their answer.
Oh, it's gonna be well, there'll be a
lot of laughs in Plainfield with those two.
Maybe
that's going to be a good time. Scott Greider, he's a Kendall County board member. He's an attorney. He's a candidate for Congress, a GOP candidate in Illinois 14 on the ballot on Tuesday. More information on his candidacy and campaign, ScottGreider.com, G-R-Y-D-E-R, G-R-Y-D-E-R, ScottGreider.com. Scott, thanks for joining us. Good luck Tuesday.
Thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Amy continuing our conversation with Republican candidates for the congressional seat in 14, currently held by Lauren Underwood, who's BFFs with Kamala Harris.
I mean, can you imagine them on stage together tomorrow?
I can't wait.
She's coming on Friday, which is tomorrow, I guess. And, yeah, they're going to have an event in Plainfield.
Wonderful.
A meeting of the minds.
Next candidate up is James Martyr. Martyr for Congress, martyr the number four for Congress.us is his website. Twice elected and current Kendall County Republican chairman, among other political experience. James Martyr, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. I'm glad to be on the Morning Answer this morning. How are you doing?
Good. Jim, you've run for office before, a couple of different offices. What makes this one the one that's going to stick?
Look, I'm Jim Martyr. I'm running for U.S. Congress in the 14th District to represent you. My beautiful wife, Jill, and I have been married 37 years. We're blessed with our four children and grandchildren. But I'm in the race for the same reasons that matter to you, to protect life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. These are the foundations of our American principles. Our nation and values are under assault. The current occupant, Lauren Underwood, does not agree with these principles. She votes 100% with Pelosi and Biden. She's a friend and cohort of the squad, along with Kamala there, right? And she has failed to denounce anti-American statements and anti-Semitism by Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib. She's failed to keep America safe and secure the border while she served on the Homeland Security Committee. And she's failed the business community and fueled inflation on the American workers.
Has she authored any legislation? James?
You know, I have not seen anything recently. I know she did a little bit in those first two terms, but mostly she's quiet as a mouse, voting 100% of the time on every bill that comes down her pike from the Biden-Pelosi administration.
What's your policy priority if you were to make it to Congress?
So, look, my plan's simple. Set our economy on a firm foundation of growth. Dismantle the Biden policies that have robbed us of energy independence. Bring American energy back. Stop the policies fueling inflation. We need to protect our rights and freedom, secure our border, protect our votes, our individual liberty, medical choice from the assault of mandates, and protect parents' rights for our children in schools. And finally, stop out-of-control spending in Congress. I will be relentless in my efforts to reduce the size and scope of the federal government, end government waste, fraud, and abuse, and balance the budget. These are simple things. This is what America needs, like House Freedom Caucus Congresswoman Mary Miller, who's endorsed me in this race. She's 100% conservative. We need more House Freedom Caucus members. I will join the House Freedom Caucus with Jim Jordan and the rest. We need to get this done. It's time to do it.
Tell us what kind of campaign you've put together. Do you have the resources, manpower and money to not only for Tuesday, but beyond?
Absolutely. So up till now, I mean, look, we've got the best grassroots campaign. I'm endorsed by over 120 people in and around the district. I have Republican leaders. I have the endorsement of Illinois Family Action, McHenry County Pro-Life Victory Pact, Taxpayers United of America. As I mentioned, Congresswoman Mary Miller, the Illinois Federation of Right to Life, And I have folks that are working for me and my team's working for me. And we're out there walking precincts. We're out there getting the job done. We've had the good fortune to be able to drop multiple district-wide mailers. We're running advertising. I mean, it's been a great year for campaign, you know, and I'm excited with this crazy, ridiculous summer primary, right? So it's great that we can get out there and meet people in the spring and summer here.
What's people's biggest problems right now? I mean, besides inflation, the obvious, what are there some kitchen table issues that people in your district are concerned about?
You know, it's their rights, you know, that the shutdown, the shuttering of the economy, the attack on their individual liberty, what's going on in the schools. I mean, you know, the indoctrination in the schools, the assault from the mandates. And look, these people, you know, they need some help. But really the big thing, you know, as you said, it's inflation in the economy. And people cannot afford what's going on. That's a tax on them. It's a tax on the American people. And that's what they're doing. And we got to stop it.
Where are you on this quote unquote bipartisan gun bill that's moving its way through the Senate?
Look, the whole bill is ridiculous in itself, but I'm all for, hey, if we can give the American people some of their tax, hard-earned taxpayer money back, let's do that, give them a break. But, you know, they're only doing this temporarily. Let's get in there and do it for real. Let's, you know, as I said, my mission is reduce the size and scope of federal government. Let's cut waste, fraud, and abuse, eliminate things like the Department of Ed and things we don't need.
Well, wait. Not gas tax rebate. The gun bill in the Senate.
The gun bill. Oh, yeah. My gosh. Look, I'm 100% Second Amendment. This is outrageous. You know, you got rhinos. I'm not even sure they're rhinos, like Kinzinger and Cheney out there voting for this crap, and we got to stop it. It's look, the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. I'm not sure what they don't get about that shall not be infringed part. We need to defend it, you know, for law-abiding citizens and for Americans to defend themselves and defend us from a tyrannical government, which is what we got both in Springfield and Washington.
All right. He is Jim Martyr. Martyr for Congress. Martyr, the number 4, congress.us is the website for more info about his candidacy and campaign. Jim, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. Good luck on Tuesday.
All right. Thanks for having me.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. We're talking to the Republican candidates running in Illinois 14, running for the Republican nomination to face incumbent Congressperson Lauren Underwood general.
Who will be campaigning with Vice President Kamala Harris tomorrow in Plainfield.
That's a big get for Lauren. Our next candidate, we talked to Scott Grider, Kendall County board member. We've talked to James Martyr, Kendall County Republican chairman. Now in studio with us, he wants to get back in the saddle. I think that's why he came to studio. Mike Coolidge, who spent 14 years as a radio talk show host.
Wow.
I've been on Mike's show back in the day.
What's the name of your show?
The Mike Coolidge Show.
Past tense. I know.
Yeah, out there.
That's very, it's very innovative.
It's similar to the Dan Proft show.
He's a messaging genius. Mike, you're doing it in reverse. You're supposed to run for office, then you get one of these cushy radio jobs. You're doing it in reverse. What are you doing?
Yes, I know. I follow this like you guys do every single day, the state of our country, the state of Illinois. And when they redid these maps, I said, there is no way in heck that we're going to put up somebody who's going to lose to Lauren Underwood in this seat.
Again.
Yes.
Because we've done that twice.
I know.
Yeah.
So I looked around. I asked people who I really trust. A mutual friend of ours, Jeannie Ives, was one of the first people I asked. And she interrupted me in the middle of explaining this. And she said, Mike, run. You can win this seat. You can run. You can do this. And here we are at the tail end of the campaign, and I've run a better campaign than any of my opponents. I've raised more money than any of my opponents. I have more volunteers and resources. We're having the best feedback. We're really confident Tuesday night. We're not taking anything for granted. but we're the best candidate to take on Lauren Underwood, and we're confident, too, that we're going to beat her in November.
Do you think it's an act of desperation that Vice President Kamala Harris is coming out?
I mean,
this is almost unheard of.
I hope that she comes every single week between now and November, Kamala Harris, into the district and into Illinois, because she...
What's she going to say?
She's the... She's worse than Joe Biden as far as speaking goes and articulating the viewpoint of the Biden administration, which, by the way, Lauren Underwood is 100% behind, voting 100% with. There was a piece in yesterday's Wall Street Journal, Daniel Henniger, at the very end said something I've been saying from the beginning, which is we need to do the exact opposite of everything that they're doing with the border, with gas taxes, and they're talking about gas cards. Lauren Underwood was for all of these things, just ridiculously stupid. They'd have no clue about how the private sector works, how businesses work. And Lauren Underwood's been a bureaucrat her entire life and a two-term congressperson. She is completely out of touch with the people of the 14th district, the new 14th. By the way, the new 14th district, 70% of it has never voted and seen Lauren Underwood on the ballot. So she has no connection with this district. She does in certain areas like Kendall County and north and a little bit east of that. But the whole western part of the district is very Republican. We have the southern part of the district as well, all brand new to her. So we have already built connections with people all over the district. And I've been traveling every single day. I'm getting sunburned, out knocking on doors every day. But we're really confident that we're going to do this, Dan.
You're a military veteran. So where are you with U.S. support for Ukraine in trying to repel the Russians? I mean, should our support be open-ended? Are we doing enough? Are we doing too much?
No, it should not be open-ended. I'm concerned about it a lot, that we just have this kind of rubber stamp. Let's just keep writing checks and see what happens here. That's one of the reasons I often say on the campaign trail, you don't need to have served in the military to love your country or be a patriot, but it does help when you're asking a Lloyd Austin or a Mark Milley in a committee meeting, what the heck are you doing with our military? If you've served in uniform and you've been in a combat zone and you're not intimidated by these people with stars, they don't know everything. The senior leaders of our military and definitely the senior person in the Department of Defense right now, I think, should be questioned about everything they're doing with our military. And yeah, the Ukraine thing, I mean, yeah, it's awful that Vladimir Putin invaded, but are we going to do that for Finland now too? Are we going to do it for any country in Eastern Europe that is threatened by Putin, all on the taxpayer dimes of Americans? I'm cautious, and we need people who think through every single bill and every single reiteration of what's happening there with our military and the money and the resources we're sending there. It should absolutely not be a blank check.
If you're the nominee, how are you going to respond to the campaign that'll be run against you and every other Republican, that you're a Trump clone, that you supported the insurrectionists, that you're a danger to our democracy, essentially? I mean, think about that in the context of what you're seeing, to the extent you're watching it from the Jan 6 star chamber right now.
Yeah. Did they reignite it? Now they're talking about dragging it out into July. Obviously, it's a complete distraction from inflation, from the border, from gas prices. We just have to shift. And this has happened numerous times. Some of the editorial questions from some reporters in the district, that's all they want to talk about. January 6th. Where do you stand on Trump? Where do you stand on January 6th? It's like, to me, that's almost offensive to the people who can't afford to fill up their gas tanks, who can't afford groceries. They're going to do that. You know they're going to. And we just need to call them out on it, that they are completely distracting from the actual real issues of the American people.
What about the federal gas tax holiday to reduce prices? 18 cents a gallon, 4 cents for diesel fuel. Are you for it or against it?
It's dumb. It's stupid. It's a Band-Aid that won't do anything. It will likely increase gas taxes ultimately gas prices ultimately, because the market will react to it. And a lot of people think that it is a tax on the point of sale of when you fill up your gas tank, but it's not. It's a step before that. So the market is going to respond to that, and it might wind up being and resulting in more. We need to drill more. We need to approve more refineries. We need to approve more. We need to not be in the complete lockstep with the environmental extremist lobby, which Lauren Underwood is in. And no, I think that's a bad idea, and it's not going to help things.
Well, when you were doing your radio show, and it was syndicated in
yes.
markets that were described as, you described, small-town America, rural America, non-big city America.
Yes.
So what did you learn over 14 years from talking to people in those communities every day?
That they're ignored by so many people, that their viewpoint is not talked about, not expressed. It was funny, right after Trump was elected in 2016, there was like this three-week window or so where all these reporters from New York City and L.A. and D.C. and even Chicago, the city proper, well, let's go check out, you know, La Salle, Peru, and Hennepin, and Sycamore, Illinois, and Yorkville. Let's see what makes them tick. And then they didn't like the answer that they were being ignored and that it wasn't all the awful things that they call people on who are on the right of center of, or right side of the political spectrum. And then they went back to just saying, wait, it must have been Putin who had something to do with the election and blah, blah, blah. We all know that story. They continue to be ignored now. Again, talking about what you just said, distracting from the issues that are hurting them. And when I knock on doors and talk to people, every single one of them says, inflation, gas prices, and the border are their number one issues. And that, of course, is being ignored by people in the, you know, Chicago media market, deep down blue Chicago I'm talking about, and the coastal elites.
He is Mike Coolidge. He is a former radio talk show host, a U.S. Army veteran, and a candidate for Congress in the 14th, the Republican primary on Tuesday. He's on the ballot, Mike Coolidge. Coolidge with a K.
Thank you.
And it's, I knew you were
Coolidge.com.
You know, come on. I'm on it. Coolidge. Yeah, Coolidge with a K, Coolidge.com. And Mike, thanks so much for joining us in studio and good luck on Tuesday.
Love your show, Dan and Amy.
Thank you.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy, all right, next up in our list of candidates for the Republican nomination for Congress in the 14th, Jack Lombardi. Jack Lombardi is a CEO and founder of a digital marketing company, and the website, LombardiForCongress.com, Lombardi like Vince, LombardiForCongress.com. Jack Lombardi, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Thank you to your listeners.
So why are you running?
You know, Have you looked around? Have you had enough yet? I mean, honestly, have you had enough? I mean, every one of us has looked around. We see that the country is going in the wrong direction. I don't trust politicians anymore. I mean, a lot of us sat back and thought that there were good people that were in office on both sides of the aisle that actually shared the same American values that we do, that want to protect the American dream. And what's happened, there's been so much political gamesmanship. The parties have become so divided that it's like almost like a country that we can't even recognize right now under the Biden administration. And that has largely to do with Lauren, my opponent, Lauren Underwood, who votes with him 100% of the time. I mean, I call her the AOC of the Midwest. I mean, she's the same thing. It's just she doesn't, you know, jump on Twitter and make stupid comments all
the
time. Yeah,
but why now?
She's actually pretty smart for that.
Why now? What was your aha moment? You're like, you know what? I got to do it.
You know, honestly, I mean, it goes a line, I mean, not to sound weird, it goes a line with faith, and it just hit me like a ton of bricks. It was like, man, you know, we need people with integrity and character in office instead of these career politicians or people who have always wanted to be a politician. Believe me, this is the last thing I ever wanted to do. And when people call me a politician, I cringe. We need to put good people in office, people with business skills that can start running this country more like a business and less like a social project. That is the core of our problem. And because I do have the digital marketing background, I could take on one of the biggest issues, or at least in my opinion, the biggest issue we face, and that's the controlled messaging that's pushing out a controlled narrative, aka propaganda, which is through big tech. I mean, they can lie to all these people who are sitting on Congress and Senate, because many of them, you know, they're just older, right? They didn't come up in this era. It's to be fair to them. And some of the questions that they're asking Mark Zuckerberg about, you know, how Facebook works, and they didn't even get into the nook and crannies of the algorithm that is blatantly censoring conservatives or an opposing voice that goes against what the Biden administration is shoving down our throat. This is an issue. The American people need to have the conversation, even if it's uncomfortable. And they've, you know, big tech has been the long arm now I call them the Progressive Party. I mean, so that's the biggest problem we're facing right now. And that trickles down to where we can't question the origin of the problems of why we're paying so much at the pump, why we're dealing with inflation. I mean, we don't have a voice if this isn't solved. And this is, it's putting a big mask, or it's putting duct tape over the mouth of good-hearted Americans who love this country, who say, hey, wait a second, there's something wrong here. They can't cry foul. I mean, even going back to the unconstitutional mandates that happened when, you know, I rallied behind the moms. I've had my life threatened over it. But, you know, if there's a hill I'm going to die on, it's going to be protecting my children, your children, and our grandchildren, because they are our future, right? So whatever we don't call, you know, as foul, that this administration, like things that are happening down in Springfield and what's happening in D.C., our youth is going to think, well, this is just normal. And we know it's not. So it's on us. It's on our generation to get up and fight for these kids. And I'm so grateful that so many people did, and so many Illinoisan moms got involved. Matter of fact, I have a Facebook group with 21,000 moms in it that I built and protected to help give them a voice so they can learn about what's happening in Illinois schools. There's a mound of issues and reasons why, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
Since you brought up the digital marketing company and the angle of incidents, big tech, we haven't heard a lot of candidates talking about big tech, which is interesting. Do I understand one of your properties is a dating site of some sort?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I built a dating website years ago for people with sexually transmitted diseases because, you know, I mean, the Christian in me said that Jesus never turned his back on anybody, right? And what that did is it actually helped people who have been impacted with an STD to find hope and love again. And, you know, I've received emails from people that said, man, this is the second chance I was looking at. And, you know, I mean, that's what's great about America. I mean, we're always given another chance. I mean, that's why the American dream is so great, is that we can, as long as we're willing to put in the work, or we're willing to, put our nose to the grindstone, we can prosper in this nation. Yeah. I mean, you got to understand.
Are you putting monkeypox on that now? Because monkeypox is, well, it's common, and, you know, it's sexually transmitted disease, mostly in the gay and bisexual arena, but still. All right.
What are you, Dr. Ruth?
Yeah, you know.
Okay. okay. Jack, you know, I was going to ask the more pertinent question, which is, do you think there's somebody out there who could love me? Do you think I could find love,
you know,
Jack? No, don't.
Don't
answer. I'm fragile. Don't.
No,
don't.
I, you know what? Listen, I'm going to leave it alone. I'm going to leave it alone.
I had so many
things going through my head, but nope.
Yeah.
Not for air.
See,
all right, go ahead.
So, no, I mean, that's the thing. You know, you have to exercise restraint as a candidate. And so that you just passed an important test. Congratulations. He is Jack Lombardi. He's the CEO and founder of a digital marketing company. Get more information on his candidacy and campaign. LombardiForCongress.com, LombardiForCongress.com. Jack, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. And
thank you. Enjoy the rest of your day. It's a beautiful day.
Yeah.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you, Jack.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. All right, our last candidate in our review of the five candidates running for the Republican nomination for Congress in Illinois 14. That would be to face Lauren Underwood, who's bringing the giggler, Reparation H, Kamala Harris, to Plainfield tomorrow.
I think I'm going to have to go to that.
That's
some big guns coming in, huh?
It's quite a nice turn she's doing for Republicans to ally herself with Kamala Harris in the Western Burbs. So, Lauren Underwood, one of the pickup opportunities. You've heard us talking to candidates for 11 against Bill Foster, for 6 against either Sean Cass or Marie Newman. Three Chicagoland, suburban and exurban opportunities for pickups as part of taking back the House in November. This is also part of taking back Chicagoland suburbs and taking back Illinois by extension. So these are important races. And you're seeing the opportunity that other people see when you have as many candidates running for the nomination as you do in these districts. Our last candidate that we're going to speak with today is Jamie Milton. Her website, campaign website, Jamie, J-A-M-I-E, J-A-M-I-E, Milton.com, JamieMilton.com. She's a conservative Republican. She describes herself, who has gone through some hardships in her life that she says inform the kind of congressperson she would be as the representative for Illinois 14. She joins us now. Jamie, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Thank you for having me today.
So what drove you to this candidacy?
Yes. So I love America. I love God and I love people. And I come out of the corporate sector. I have 25 years in business, various levels of leadership, with the last 5 years serving as vice president to a manufacturing facility that made pellet mills for America's farmers. Over the last several years, when we encountered the lockdowns and mandates, it was extremely concerning to me that we were waiting to hear from the government on whether we were deemed essential or not. Yes. Unfortunately, through that, there were layoffs that took place. We were told to mask up our mechanics, which anyone who wears glasses knows that when you put a mask on, it actually fogs up the person's glasses. And to see that the government was releasing to the American people solutions that just simply did not make sense, not only do the masks not work, for one, but for two, I have mechanics who are working with machinery tools with their hands, their glasses are fogging up, and this created a massive safety hazard. So I was able to get those mask mandates torn down. But at the root of it all, what I saw was an attack on our U.S. Constitution, an attack on our freedoms as American citizens, and a government that has crossed over in feeling as though they have the right to tell its citizens that they don't have the ability to earn an income and pay their bills. This is when I decided to step up. I thought, you know what, enough is enough, and I need to now become part of the solution and bring my experience to Washington and be that wall of protection to our families and our communities.
How long were you shut down before they deemed you essential?
Well, everything was, we were able to put things in place where we had separated office staff, we had separated the mechanics. But because it hurt our business so bad, because our client base was being told to shut down. So therefore, that impacted business. So our layoffs predominantly were because of the lack of business coming in due to other businesses suffering from that. But yeah, we laid off about 10 to 15% of our staff. And so as a leader, you feel the weight of that, because these are not just employees that you are laying off. These are families that can no longer be provided for. And I had a problem with that.
You mentioned, as I mentioned at the outset, the obstacles you've overcome in life that inform your candidacy, for example.
Yes. So I feel that I have a very unique and dynamic and powerful story. I do have a story of rags to riches in the sense that I came from a broken home. I was born to two 18-year-old parents. So basically children having children. And of course, that's not necessarily going to set you on a firm foundation in life. But I grew up in the inner city and within Cook County, and I have seen and experienced firsthand what Democratic policies, how it affects our families and our communities. I went to an inner city high school. I encountered gang violence.
What high school?
And
what high school?
Shurs High School.
Shurs.
Shurs High School.
They're in our conference, yes.
Yeah, rough. It was rough back in the day. I mean, now it's, you know, that neighborhood has changed quite a bit. But when I was going back there in the 90s, you know, they had, you know, there were gunshots going off outside the school, gang fights on the CTA buses, and it was just a different world.
My concern is... It hasn't changed, yeah, Jamie.
My concern is I don't want to see Chicago policy coming into District 14. I also have the ability to speak to women's issues. I know that Lauren Underwood is, you know, pro-choice. I was a 15-year-old little girl that was allowed to walk into an abortion clinic and make a life-changing decision that brought a great amount of depression into my life that took a lifetime to work through. Now they have reduced that age down to 12. You know, does a 12-year-old have the ability to make a medical decision that not only can harm them from a physical standpoint, but also harms them from a mental, spiritual, and emotional standpoint? And so I really feel, because of my personal experiences, I am the strongest pro-life advocate in this race. Lauren Underwood is going to have a hard time coming against me on pro-life issues, being someone who has walked through it, has seen the other side of it, and knows the darkness that awaits a woman on the other side of having made a decision like that. You know, medically, a person does not have the ability to understand that there are consequences to their actions until they become 25 or 26 years old. So knowing that from a medical standpoint, why on earth are we allowing our children to make decisions like changing their gender, walking into an abortion clinic, all these decisions that the government would love to say, we want to empower our children to make these decisions? What I see is that we are tearing down parental rights. And it's almost as if the education system is desiring to become the parent to that child. And I have a massive issue with that.
This is your first time running for office, right?
It is.
And so what's the experience been? I wonder, just to provide some instruction to other people who may be considering running for local office next year or a state or federal office later down the road. What do you say to them?
Yeah. So, you know, I want to encourage everyone. I feel that often in our society, fear can hold us back from moving forward. So, of course, when it, you know, came to me, you know, it's time to step up and become part of the solution. The thoughts are, well, how do you even run for Congress? What does the petition look like? How do you get on the ballot? There's all these practical questions that need answering. My experience going through even like the FEC website, the Illinois State Board of Elections website, there were some discrepancies that I came across on the site, such as you are not considered a candidate until you raise or spend $5,000. So I thought, my goodness, you know, am I going to be able to accomplish that? So I called the organization. They said, actually, the wording on there is very poor. You can run as a candidate. You don't necessarily need to raise or spend the $5,000. I said, well, your wording on there says otherwise. And so my concern with that is that people may be deterred from moving forward and becoming a solution to their communities because of things like wrong information being out there. And if we know it's wrong, why isn't it being corrected? But our U.S. Constitution and our forefathers were very clear that this position is a position who is called to serve. When I first decided to run, I had many people in the Republican circle say, if you can't raise $4 million, don't even bother. And I thought, well, that's very counterintuitive to what our forefathers had envisioned. My heart is to run to protect the American people, to protect our children, protect our communities, and really protect every facet of society that our current administration seeks to destroy. And so I was really encouraged by the gentleman out of New Jersey, New Jersey State Senate, Edward
Burr. The truck driver. Yeah.
Who won his race on $176. Yep. That really encouraged me. It's like it is possible. And so, of course, I am the candidate in the race who has raised the least amount of money. And, of course, you need to raise money to run a campaign. There's no doubt about that, especially with gas prices where they're at. You need basic essentials like literature, you know, event spaces, things of that nature. However, I don't feel that money should deter a person from stepping forward and doing the right thing. So with that, I would say I would encourage everyone, if you're really being driven to stand for justice, to stand for truth, to stand for your family and your children and your communities, don't let anything stop you. The answers are there. I have seen more grassroots candidates being raised up in this hour for such a time as this, for this very reason. And it's very encouraging. So I encourage everyone to get involved, whether it's at your local school board, whether it is at your county. There are many positions that need good soldiers, good American Patriot soldiers standing guard to protect the fabric of what this nation was built on.
She is Jamie Milton. JamieMilton.com, J-A-I-M-E, Milton.com is the website. And Jamie Milton, she's a member, candidate for Congress, obviously in the 14th for the Republican nomination on Tuesday. She's on the ballot to face Lauren Underwood if she's victorious. Jamie, thanks so much for joining us and good luck on Tuesday.
Thank you for having me. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too. And she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I had never spoken with Jamie Milton before. I was impressed with her. It's interesting. I liked her attitude. It's also an interesting contrast to the attitude of women of the left, since you have the candidates we spoke with this morning running in the 14th, running to take on Lauren Underwood, who is one of, like, a basically an honorary member of the Socialist Spice Girls.
Yeah. She's the Midwest not, Spice Girl.
She's not, I mean, she's not so,
she goes along to get along.
Acerbic. Yeah. She doesn't say, she hasn't been caught saying as many outrageous things as the Omars and the Talibs and the AOCs of the world, but she's of that ilk. That's how she votes. That's how she talks when she does.
But she actually thinks that Kamala Harris' visit tomorrow is going to help her campaign.
So here's the thing, too. I like the contrast. So, you know, compare what you heard, for example, from Milton. And I'm not endorsing anybody in the 14th, but I'm just saying I hadn't spoken with her before. She understands. She's raised the least amount of money. It's going to be difficult to win. It usually is in that circumstance. There are outliers, of course. But I just like her attitude. Compare that to AOC, because Lauren Underwood is a proxy for AOC, as some of the candidates you heard say. AOC has recently posted on social media, because that's mainly what she does, only 10 women in the history of the United States have ever given birth while serving in Congress. 10. The House remains a very hostile place to have a baby, with vote schedules pretty much assuming no one has a family and often requiring travel 2 times a week and changing last minute. The job requires you to pay $25,000 in out-of-pocket work expenses that are not reimbursable or tax-deductible. No housing allowance, despite requiring you to pay for rent two homes or else risk losing your job. No included dental or vision insurance. It's tough. You know, she's talking.
Bartending might have been better for her.
She's talking, about, the concept of starting a family while she's a member of Congress, only making $175,000 a year.
I mean, I don't know how she does it. Really.
You can't. Well, she can't. She's saying she can't. You can't have a family. This is why only 10 women in history of the United States have given birth while serving in Congress. Well, the median age of members of Congress is past the ideal birthing age for most women, of course,
right.
But it's, men older too. The Congress people in their 20s and 30s are the outliers. So, I mean, that needs to be factored in, but the whole, the burden on her to be a member of Congress, you heard from Jamie Milton, for example, talk about the challenges she overcame and how they inform the kind of person she is today, the kind of candidate that she would be. And contrast the and the other side is always a victim. They're always put upon. They're always not getting what they deserve. And compare that to the attitude of a candidate like we just heard from. I just think the contrast is so stark and so important, because it's really a choice about what kind of society we're going to have. This is very much a conversation we had with Bob Woodson yesterday.
Yep.
Do you refer to Hank Aaron as the strikeout king or the home run king? I love that. That the attitude and the level of entitlement, that is a cultural phenomenon that we're not discussing enough. And when you see manifestations of the difference, it really drives it home.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, a postscript on our discussion of how AOC doesn't want to start a family because she only makes $175,000 a year, and you just can't do it on that salary, although she does have a...
She has a fiancé.
I don't know.
He said yes.
I don't know if, you know, what he does, but... regardless, also, the world's going to end, I think, in 8 years. So what's the point?
Gore said the world was already supposed to end in 2022. That didn't happen.
Postscript.
Yes,
text from 630. Those entitled politicians make me ill. I was at a leadership conference last week run by retired Navy SEALs. Three tours of duty average, not one of them earning more than $50,000 a year. The most loyal, grateful, self-aware group of men you can find. They retired and went on to create a great business of executive development and leadership. That's how they paved the road to financial success. Right. Some do it that way. Some do it parasitically, like most of the members of Congress who came to the table with nothing and walk out with vast sums of money, like our senior senator, Dick Durbin. Never had a job in the private sector in his entire life. And what's his net worth? And how does
his
he do it?
Too?
Well, how does he do it? Right.
Lobbyist.
Yeah, his wife's a lobbyist. Right. But I know there's separation. Never.
Of course.
Never.
No, they
the
never
two
talk
roads
about business
shall cross.
At dinner time.
Talking about what Jay Powell had to say yesterday, one of the key moments that must have been difficult for the big guy to hear. He was asked by Tennessee Senator Bill Hagerty about the Putin price hike. Is that what we have? That's what we have going on here?
Would you say that the war in Ukraine is the primary driver of inflation in America?
No, inflation was high before, certainly before the war in Ukraine broke out.
Oh, no. And then Elizabeth Warren followed up with a question.
Chair Powell, will gas prices go down as a result of your interest rate increase?
I would not think so, no.
Oh, double whammy.
Well, why would you expect them to?
I don't know. Well, she was expecting it to. They want any good news. Anything so the Democrats don't look bad and the Biden administration doesn't look dumb.
For more on what's happening at the macro level, and maybe we'll get into some micro discussions as well, Christopher Whalen, investment banker, chairman of Whalen Global Advisors, author of Ford Men, From Inspiration to Enterprise, editor for the Institutional Risk Analyst as well. Chris, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Hey, good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy.
Morning. So your reviews of what Jay Powell had to offer yesterday on matters inflation and recession related?
Well, Powell got up there and gave the normal narrative from the Fed, which is, you know, a view from the ivory tower, if you will. But I was impressed by the fact that Republicans are starting to focus on limiting the Fed's flexibility. In other words, putting them back into the box, because under Bernanke and particularly under Janet Yellen, the board went crazy. They decided that 2% inflation is the same as price stability, and that's wrong. So my hope is that the Republicans are going to continue to focus on the really ill-considered and reckless policies that the Fed has engaged in. In pursuit of full employment or in pursuit of defending us from COVID, for example, and really force the issue back to Congress. In other words, if you say to the Fed, nah, we're going to take the full employment words out of the statute, you're now responsible just to make sure we have price stability. That forces Congress to do everything they want to do as far as employment, as far as stimulating the economy, and that's the way it should be. Because since really the 70s, when we put in place Humphrey Hawkins, and remember, this is Hubert Humphrey and Augustus Hawkins, the great socialist from California, and it was a deal that basically was in order to avoid giving everyone a government job. It was a compromise. So we said, well, the Fed will target full employment, but we'll also target price stability, which is totally conflicted, by the way. You can't do it. You go back and forth in a kind of a manic fashion. So I think the Republicans are starting to get it. they realize that we have got to put limitations on the central banks, or as I like to say, we need to put the economists in chains. You know, we need to chain every economist to a historian and say, talk to the historian before you do anything.
I like that idea.
Well, look, I'll give you an example. The Bank of England is slowly unwinding their special policies for COVID. How are they going to do it? They're going to look at the market to determine what the level of reserves ought to be in the financial market. At the Fed, on the other hand, we're going to model the number for reserves as a percent of GDP. Everything at the Fed is a percent of GDP. And they are clueless about financial markets, which should concern people in Chicago, right? You make a lot of money in the financial markets. So that's the problem. We have a whole New Deal organization called the Federal Reserve Board that has become like Gosplan. It's like the Soviet planning agency. And they always get it wrong. If you were to really hold these people responsible for their predictions, it would be appalling. In fact, I'm thinking maybe we should penalize them when they're wrong. We should have a little button. We could, you know, give them a small electric shock and say, wrong.
Yeah,
there's no discipline on them. There's no limit.
Or personally, since most of these individuals are creatures of Wall Street and big banks?
No, they're mostly academic economists.
Well, there's that.
And this is the problem, Dan. They don't have any money in the bank. If you don't have any money in the bank, you can't stand your ground. You know, I was listening to that ad before we came on about the Supreme Court justice in Illinois. That's the kind of people we need. If you look at the people who were on the Federal Reserve Board 100 years ago, do you think any of them would have spent any time thinking about what Elizabeth Warren has to say? No. They would have dismissed her as a dilettante. And that's what she is. Unfortunately, the people we put in government today are not from business. They're not people of accomplishment. They are, you know, basically people who should be working on the staff.
Well,
instead of making policy decisions.
Maybe at the Fed, but on the other side of the house, the fiscal side, the Treasury secretaries and economic advisors, I mean, a lot of those individuals are from Morgan Stanley and Citibank and Goldman Sachs.
Well, you kind of need people that understand finance, but the problem is the conflicts. If you look at the amount of money that was stolen by some of these advisors at Treasury, both during Trump and now during Biden, you know, take a look at BlackRock first and their activities, cherry-picking assets as they merrily help the Treasury with their various tasks, right? That's a problem. But I think, look, it's very simple. All we have to do is say, if you go into government, you can't go back and do what you were doing before for 5 years. You have to go on garden leave. That would solve the problem with the revolving door. And yet no one has been willing to do that in either party. And I think we need that. See, to me, I always think of the people who got us through the Depression, Dan. You know, people like Carter Glass, people like Jesse Jones, who restructured the whole U.S. economy. And they did it selflessly because they knew that the economy needed help. They knew that most of them went to Washington looking for help. And Hoover and FDR said, stay. You know, stay. And they, in many cases, stayed for a decade through World War II. These people rebuilt this country. But you look at the cast of characters today, oh, my God, it's night and day. And that's our problem. We have to start to – I think we need a couple of crises to get everybody awake, and then we'll start picking better people for government.
Yeah, well, that would – I mean, you know, part of it is that just that the disposition, the cultural change where that segment of society is more interested in hanging out with Klaus Schwab than they are in pushing pushing America forward.
Well, it's like AOC. You were talking about her before. Imagine getting her up in a debate statewide in New York. She can't do it. She has to hide in Queens. That's the only place she can function politically. And she could be a complete idiot. She doesn't have to say anything of substance because it's all about popularity. It's all about celebrity, right? We live in the age of celebrity. So competence has been discarded. Instead, we pick celebrity. And this is the result you get. So,
How
long do you think we're going to have to live like this with inflation and high gas prices and food prices and everything? Car loans, because I know they're going to raise the rates again in July, which is not helpful if you have a mortgage, you know, adjustable mortgage, or have to pay car loans and credit card debt.
No, if you have an adjustable mortgage, that's not helpful. Yeah. You should have refied into a fixed a year ago. But I think that they, because the Fed was so badly wrong on the inflation side, now they're going to have to go back in the other direction and just squeeze this thing. Probably force stocks down 15-20% from the highs. So we're giving back some of the illusory wealth that we thought we had, right? And then
you're talking about another 15%?
Uh-huh. Yeah. We could give back a quarter from the highs. Mm-hmm. So think about 25%. I have a very wealthy friend who sold a business right before COVID started, put $150 in the bank, okay? And he said to me the other day, he goes, Chris, if I have to give back a third of it, that's okay, because I know that that third wasn't real. Now, that's a view of somebody who's very astute financially.
Yeah.
Okay? Most people aren't like that.
Well, that's
but I would say to most consumers, you know, rates are going higher because Jay's got to recoup his credibility.
Yeah. Well, that's also your friend that walked away with $150 million and is willing to give
it. No, he earned it. He built a great business.
No,
but my point is,
if he had
closed in April, he probably wouldn't have closed that transaction in April. He closed it in February of 2020.
No, I get it. It just reminds me of a friend of mine who's very wealthy. Always says too. When he tells a story about how something went bad for him, and then it always ends with the same punchline. But the good news I realize is that I'm still rich, and so that's always the good. So no matter what happens to him, he's always got that as the backstop. He's still rich, so that always helps.
Yeah, but to Amy's question, we got to squeeze an awful lot of demand out of this economy. Number one. And then energy prices are global. So until the Europeans stabilize and are able to figure out how they're going to heat their homes next winter, by the way, which will probably be with electricity provided by coal-fired power plants that they're taking out of mothballs, that's going to be a medium-term problem. It really is. Because think about it. We have plenty of oil and natural gas in the U.S. Why are our prices up? Because of global prices. There are people bidding for those commodities to ship them somewhere else in the world. And by the way, that is not a very efficient way of doing it. If you think about the oil, for example, that the eastern half of Germany was getting from Russia, it's very heavy, sour oil, and there's only certain kinds of refineries that can deal with it. People think oil is oil. It's not. It really depends on the type of oil, how heavy it is, how much refining you have to do in order to get distillates out the other end. That's a very complicated equation. And then you think about food, wheat. Oh, my God. You know, all of Africa and Asia is going to basically get creamed because of food prices or not even being able to buy food at any price. Think about that. You're going to have starvation in the Middle East, Egypt, most of Africa, and the political consequences of this are going to be dire.
And we've talked quite a bit about that actually too. And that what is the gathering storm. It's awful. And of course this is something we talked about during the pandemic as well, when we were breaking, supply chains for, the UN World Food Program and other, aid agencies.
Yeah. But think about this in the FT, this week in the Financial Times, they had this long interview with Hillary Clinton talking about how our democracy is in danger. This woman has done more to promote war around the world and to cause suffering and death, and she's going to lecture us about democracy. I'd like to airdrop Hillary Clinton into the middle of, you know, the Ukraine. Let's see how the Ukrainians greet her, okay? Or send her to Syria, where tens of thousands of people were killed in the proxy war between the Turks, the Russians, the Saudis. Everybody was, you know, involved in that one under Obama. It's astounding to me that nobody talks about this in the U.S., the impact of our policies around the world. Are we promoting peace or are we promoting war? You know? And this Ukrainian thing is a disaster. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of the Russians, but, you know, my grandma's from Ukraine. But, was this necessary? No. No. All the dilettantes around Hillary Clinton and in the Biden White House kept telling the Ukrainians they could join NATO. What a disaster. Really bad idea. We should have said, you're in the EU, be happy. Let's get rich.
Yeah, well.
The Russians would have had to watch. See, because remember, Ukraine's a prosperous society. Russia is not a prosperous society. Russia is a military society. You know, Kiev is where you make money. That's the difference.
It seems to me that there's a theme here, and it's the mysticism of the experts, whether it's Council on Foreign Relations types or the World Economic Forum types. I mean, the Venn diagram is almost a perfect circle anyway.
Well, they're all compromised. And you know who has written about this beautifully? A great Chicagoan, Alex Pollack, who was head of the Home Loan Bank in Chicago. He was in Washington, American Enterprise Institute, for many years. Mm-hmm. He always talks very eloquently about the tyranny of the experts, all of these conflicted agents who are supposed to be taking care of us, right? But they have conflicts that never end. And so the advice they give us is tainted by that conflict. You know, you should get him on the radio one day.
We will do that. I think we have had him on before. But we should get him back.
Great.
It's a good reminder.
I love Alex. Alex writes these really pithy little books about financial crises. They're also wonderful.
He is Chris Whalen, investment banker, chairman of Whalen Global Advisors, LLC, author of Ford Men from Inspiration to Enterprise, and editor for the Institutional Risk Analyst. Chris, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Have a great day, guys.
You too.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.